I believe that style is something we can learn, and you have to practice, and practicing means showing off style that ain't so good at first. And so I've had to work through a lot of that. You know, style is an opinion. I like my style, and I think it shows when someone is happy with their own style. And I want to help other people be confident in their decorating decisions, or this applies to a lot of stuff. We talk about wardrobe a lot because I think all the decorating stuff applies to that. But I think if we, you know, I see the world through house colored glasses, and I totally believe that home is the best, safest place on earth to take little risks and to learn things. But when we start getting confident in an area like that, I think it just kind of leaks over to all parts of our lives.
Hello and welcome to the Minimalist Moms podcast. If you're feeling overwhelmed by the prospect of decorating your home and you don't know where to begin, this insightful discussion with Michaelyn Smith offers clarity and encouragement. We delve into breaking traditional house rules, troubleshooting when things don't quite click, budget-friendly decorating strategies, and finding your path towards crafting a home that truly reflects your personality and brings you joy. But before we get there, I quickly want to share a minimalist tip. So this is something that I will say is slightly radical, but something I'd never heard before. Stick with me here. I heard that if you're struggling with decluttering, have a professional stager come over and stage your house, or you can DIY with a good camera. But if you do this, it can help you actually see the clutter and pare your possessions way down. It can be quite surprising how a fresh perspective can unveil the clutter that you may have overlooked in your day-to-day living. This is simply a tool, kind of like hitting the reset button on your living environment, allowing you to pare down the possessions and streamline your space. So again, I know this may be an extreme tip. I thought so when I saw it, but hey, you never know who it might help, and that's what I'm here for. So with that, let's get to the episode with Michaelyn Smith. Michaelyn, thank you so much for joining me again on the Minimalist Moms podcast.
I'm so happy to be here. One of my favorite topics.
You were actually on the show back in 2018, and it was when you were talking about your book, Cozy Minimalist Home. You have written, I think, two more since then, and you are here today to talk about your fourth book, House Rules. So we'll get into that conversation in just a minute, but why don't you go ahead and reintroduce yourself for the listeners that may not have heard that episode?
I would love to. Well, my name is Michaelyn Smith. When I first started on the internet like 100 years ago, I used the Nester because I thought, I can't use my real name. There's too many killers out there. I have since learned that the internet is actually pretty wonderful and I love it. I see the world through house colored glasses. My goal is to help women create the home they've always wanted so that they can use it the way they've always dreamed. I am an imperfectionist. I call myself a cozy minimalist. And I just love figuring out why some things in our house look amazing and other things look weird and figuring out the why, like a little scientist. And I also consider myself a teacher. So I teach classes. I just talk a lot about home. I just can't shut up about it. I love it. And I believe that every home has a silver lining and has potential.
You have such great vision too. I feel like even just looking at the photos throughout all of your books, I just love your style. So it doesn't hurt to have good style as well.
I believe that style is something we can learn, and you have to practice, and practicing means showing off style that ain't so good at first. And so I've had to work through a lot of that. Style is an opinion. I like my style, and I think it shows when someone is happy with their own style. And I want to help other people be confident in their decorating decisions, or this applies to a lot of stuff. We talk about wardrobe a lot because I think all the decorating stuff applies to that. And I totally believe that home is the best, safest place on earth to take little risks and to learn things. But when we start getting confident in an area like that, I think it just kind of leaks over to all parts of our lives.
You need to teach me. I need to like fully go through and just sit alone with your book. I've gone through it, but I just need to be alone and just start brainstorming for our new house that we just moved into.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. It's hard because the home is from 1840, but my style is more mid-century modern. So it's bringing the two together to just figure out what exactly it is that I want it to look like.
Wait, your house is in 1840s, but your style is mid-century mod?
Yeah.
I love that. My overall thing, my house rule is that style is found in the combinations. That's how it reads as unique style. Because I think like our decorating style is a conversation between our house and our own personal style. So different people that live in a house, it's going to look different. So I love that you have such a strong, like the house has this style, I have this style, and now we're going to blend it. Oh, that's so cool and exciting.
Yeah, there's definitely a blank slate here. So I'm excited to get decorating. How did you start getting into home design? Was there something when you were young that prompted you into this work?
When I played Barbies when I was little, I didn't actually play. I just played with the furniture. And we had Glamour Gals. I don't know if you remember those little 3-inch dolls. I just played with this cruise ship and moved the furniture around. I was obsessed with doll furniture and with rooms. And then I would go in my mom's, like on her dresser, and get like, she had little potted plants. Anything in the house was up for grabs to see if I could make it into something for Barbies.
Oh. So
I always loved it. My room in high school, I remember pressing flowers and then, oh my gosh, bless my heart, hairspraying and then like gluing them to the wall with hairspray. I'm sure my mom loved that. My parents would go away when I was in high school for overnight trip. And instead of having a party like a cool kid, I would rearrange the living room and then blindfold them and surprise them. And she would keep it that way. So I was obsessed.
I love that. I love that it started when you were so young and that you're continuing to do it now. This is your fourth book. Why do you think this book is different than the other three that you've written?
I thought I was done after the third book. And then I met a girl who said, oh, hi, I have all your books. And the only thing is, I'm just going to tell you, I have not actually made any changes in my house because I wasn't born with a decorating gene. I just felt like I have wasted my entire life because I thought I had made it clear or was communicating that you don't have to be born with a decorating gene. There actually is no decorating gene, but I had not clearly done a good enough job doing that. When I started thinking about my own life, I knew that I actually can really relate to that feeling because I believe the lie that some people are just born with this talent. I almost flunked spelling when I was in elementary school because I thought, you know, they give you the test on Monday and then on Friday, or the pretest on Monday, on Friday you have the real test. And I can remember I never studied because I thought the test was about if you knew it or not. Like, we're testing you. Do you know this or not? And I'm just stupid and I don't know how to spell. So I guess I don't know it. To me, studying, I thought it was a form of cheating until I had a nice teacher say, oh no, honey, this is how you learn. Here's some tools. I before E, except after C. This is how everyone learns. They study it. So I realized, oh, that's what we do in life. People assume you're born with a decorating gene. I certainly wasn't. I just started practicing when I was 8 years old with Barbies and Glamour Gals and tried to figure out and was obsessed with it and obsessed enough to fail and to have my house look stupid or not be confident with it, but use it anyway. And that's what decorating is. It's just making logical decisions in the right order, and anyone can learn it.
What do you think keeps us held back? I said that to you when we first started. I don't have great style or great vision when it comes to my house. So maybe it's an insecurity or just maybe a lack of confidence. Why else do you see that people are held back?
I think you saying you don't have great vision is actually a very legit, that is solid. Like you're saying, I don't know where I want to go yet. So I think that's a great reason to say I'm not ready to make decisions yet. We don't give ourselves time. I think that television has made us think that we move in a house and in 6 weeks, we're supposed to have everyone over and a big cheese board and celebrate my beautifully decorated house because that's what they do. That is so false. I've lived in this house. This is my 15th house. In May, it will be 2 years. I feel like it takes about 2 years just to get to know the house. Like I just got rid of some furniture in here a few weeks ago, and I'm just now confidently being able to declutter some things I was holding on to just in case the house needed it. It takes time. It's not an instant thing. Now, I think we should enjoy it during the time. And there are definitely steps. If you lack vision, create a Pinterest board. Create a Pinterest board for your whole home and maybe find some older homes that are in a mid-century mod style, or just some older homes decorated the way you like, or maybe some mid-century mod rooms that you like, and they're in new houses. And over time, as you begin to do that, you will start to see recurring themes. You might notice like, oh my gosh, almost all of the pins that I have no window treatments, or they have a specific cognac sofa on the 1950s legs. You'll see things like that that will cause you to have confidence. You didn't even know that you liked it, but they're showing up in the rooms that you love.
So your book is called House Rules. I'm curious to know, what are a few of your favorite rules that you want to share with listeners today?
It's scary calling a book about rules because it makes it sound like I'm a ruley person, and I'm not at all. I actually think that in anything creative, it's better when we break the rules. Andrew Peterson says we have to earn the right to break the rules. And the very first rule in the book is learn the rules to break them. The problem is I want us to break rules because we believe the room is going to look better, not because we don't know better. Again, all decorating is making decisions. And when you feel confident in those decisions, you can make real progress in your room. And so I would just start with that. Yes, there are rules, but that doesn't mean there are no decorating police. No one's going to get you in trouble. The whole goal of your home is for you to use it and love it. That is all that matters. So yes, I will give you guidelines. If you're like, why does my mantle look weird? It's a troubleshooting book. Like, you know, when you get a dishwasher and like the red light's on, you turn to the back. I feel like this is what this is. Like, oh, my coffee table looks weird. Well, you can find some rules, nail that scale or contrast is queen if you want to be seen, and then get up and be like, oh, well, that's why everything on my mantle looks weird, because my mantle is white, my walls are white, and everything I have up there is white or glass or see-through, and there's nothing that catches your eye. So it's just little small troubleshooting things that will help you that are memorable. So when you're at Target shopping for something, you can recall that and make a better decision. You asked what my favorite rules. Well, I love them all, but nail that scale. For so long, I was decorating with like really small 4-inch things. We moved from house to house. We were renting a lot. So I did not have control over the carpet or the walls. I couldn't move a window or anything like that. My goodness. But I knew I could bring in a pillow and I could bring in a vase. But I think I took that too far and it became kind of clutter. If I had a surface, I would put 15 items on it because I wanted it to look my style. But what I was doing is I was relying on lots of little tiny things to carry the burden of the style that I wanted. And I would look at my room, and then I would, like, if I had my computer on my lap, and I would look at a room on Pinterest that I liked, like I pinned, and I would look at that and be like, okay, their room, if I counted the items in their room, it would have like 23 items, the rug, the sofa, the two pillows on the sofa, the artwork, the coffee table, a stack of books on the coffee table. Then I would look at my room and I would have like 120. And I realized I am using a zillion tiny things because I am afraid to take a risk and buy something with scale, to buy the 12-inch vase instead of the 4-inch vase, to buy the 24-inch pillow in a cool, interesting pattern instead of a tiny, safer pillow. And so just changing my mindset about choosing a few items that are larger instead of lots of items that are smaller instantly gave me a sense of style, because we read scale visually as having style. And it also allowed me to need less things in the room to make it feel complete. And so it solved so many issues that just that one little rule of nailing that scale.
Well, and there are so many studies that talk about visual clutter adding to anxiety or just an overwhelming feeling. I love that rule for that reason, because that's something that I try and talk to my listeners about on the show. But I will say, with our new home, it's a lot more square footage than we probably needed, which is something I also talk about. So it's going to take quite a long time for us to, one, to be able to afford to furnish it, but also I don't want to make a decision just to fill a space. So I like the idea of going little by little, making decisions that are more quality. Because I think once you start buying all these little things, especially, not to call out Target, because you can find some great things in there, but if you're just going regularly and saying like, oh, this would fit my space, then you have a lot of things that you just kind of like and don't love. So I feel like for me, I personally want to go slower. Have you noticed that in your own life, just kind of taking it slower and figuring out the space before jumping in?
Oh, 100%. I think there's a time period where it just takes a while for you to get to know the house, like we talked about earlier. And then I think also like our styles can change, which is completely fine and should evolve. We're not wearing the same clothes we wore 10 years ago. Some things we might need to outgrow and pass along.
Yeah.
And then just giving ourselves time to figure out how we're going to use the room. So, you know, it's one thing to want to decorate the room. whether you're moving into a new house or you have lived in the same house for 20 years, as our lives change, we have children, children move out, someone moves in, we're caring for someone, even if you never move, we always need to evaluate our rooms and if we are using them to the fullest. If you have a room that's not being used and you wish you had a library, like those types of questions, when we move, I think we're more apt to answer that. But for the people who haven't recently moved, to constantly, meaning every year or so, maybe just evaluate if you're fully using your spaces the way that you want to use. I think that can be so helpful.
This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. I'm so happy to partner with ByHeart because their goal is to create a future where all parents feel amazing about feeding their baby, no matter how they do it. Their mission is simple: make the best infant formula in the world. Let me tell you a little bit more. ByHeart's patented protein blend gets closest to breast milk by including the two most abundant proteins in breast milk, plus whole and partially broken down proteins for a nutritious blend that's gentle on tummies. ByHeart ran a clinical trial where they compared their formula to a leading infant formula, improved benefits like less spit up, easier digestion, and so much more. ByHeart is leading the ways in a lot of ways. They're the only U.S.-made infant formula to use organic, grass-fed, whole milk, not skim. It's the only new infant formula brand to add a comparison to breast milk in their clinical trial. And ByHeart is the first infant formula company to receive Clean Label Project's Purity Award. So are you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code minimalist for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply.
Are you committed to eating clean, especially when it comes to your protein powder? With Puri's PW1 whey protein powder, you can trust that you're getting the purest ingredients without harmful chemicals or toxins. Over the last few years, I've been more interested in cleaning up our environment, cleaning up the foods that we're eating, especially with the food that I'm giving to my children. My 4-year-old is the pickiest eater, and it's difficult to get him to eat a lot of protein. So I love that I can throw Puri's protein powder into his smoothies or pancakes. Puri is third-party tested against over 200 contaminants. It's free from hormones, GMOs, pesticides, soy, and gluten, delivering 21 grams of protein per serving. Plus, like I said, it tastes delicious, even for the pickiest of eaters. So don't just take my word for it. With Puri, you can find the actual data behind every batch, which makes Puri a supplement brand that you can trust. And right now, Puri is offering my listeners 20% off their PW1 whey protein and all their great products. So go to my exclusive URL, puri.com/minimalist, and use my promo code minimalist. This even applies to the already discounted subscriptions, so you'll get almost a third off the price. Go to puri.com/minimalist and don't wait. Use promo code minimalist at puri.com/minimalist.
In my relationship, I'll want to do something. So seeing maybe a bigger picture, putting that on the wall, and my husband isn't necessarily on board with some of the design decisions that I'd like to implement. So I'm sure you've heard this before. You've been doing this for a long time now. How do you help someone that they're like, my spouse isn't necessarily on board with my design style? Where can we find compromise?
I think there's a couple of different things. So my husband and I don't always see eye to eye. You know, he wants a big recliner in the living room and I want it to look amazing.
Yeah.
So we had to compromise on that. So there's a couple of things that we do. Some rooms, he just doesn't care. So having a conversation about how important is this to you? Now, if I ask my husband which pillow he likes, he's going to give me an answer. Sometimes he'll say, I really don't care. But for the most part, he'll say, well, that one. But really on a scale of 1 to 10, he still doesn't care. So I do think every now and then it's just maybe we need to stop asking because it's not that important to them, which leads us to the question of asking on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is this decision to you? Is it going to affect you? The chair that I'm going to pick in my living room that my husband sits on is extremely important to him, as it should be. He's over 6 feet tall. He wants to be comfortable and I want him to be. It's also important to me that it looks good. So that was our conversation. So we spent a lot of time looking for a chair that both of us had to like. That's important to both of us. There are another chair in the room that he never sits in. He didn't care at all because he just wants me to be happy in the room and he wants overall our vision for the room matched up. How did we know that? Pinterest. Pinterest is such a great tool. So after our kids started going to college, we decided to kind of redo our living room. So I made a Pinterest board and he made his own Pinterest board. You know, if your husband is in it enough to have a lot of opinions, he's going to be on board with this. I think that's kind of a way to tell. If he's like, I don't want to do that, it probably means he doesn't care. So yeah. Have him make his own Pinterest board. Have him pin 50 pins of family rooms, if that's the room you're working on, or if it's his office or the pool area or the bedroom, whatever it is that he loves. And then I want you to do the same. Give it a week or so. And then take a Saturday morning, go get coffee and look at each other's boards. See what they have in common. Talk through things. I think a lot of times we just have different languages that we use. Even men, they're in this world even less. So they don't know how to communicate maybe what they do or don't like, or maybe why they hate a lot of stuff on the wall, or they really like a dark room or a bright room. You can have those conversations and then you can maybe create a Pinterest board together. It's just really about having a shared language so you can talk about what you both do and don't like and how important each individual decision is to both of you.
I think paint has been a sticking point for us because oftentimes that responsibility will fall on him and he's like, you're kind of fickle. You like to change your mind. So one of the things that has helped us is that if I find a certain style or a pen or something that I've seen that I really like, I just kind of allow that to stay. Maybe we'll put a month on it. And if I still like it after that period of time, he's more willing because he's like, okay, you're really sold on this idea and it keeps coming back up. So it's going to look different for everyone, obviously. But I think that this can be, especially if men have some opinions about how the house looks. But I will say, even in decluttering, getting your husband on board with decluttering, I have always said, allow your husband to have a room or a space of their own that they can do whatever they want with so that they feel like they're not being left behind or that their opinion and decisions don't matter. So maybe that also applies to design, like allow them that space and then you kind of get the rest of the house to make your own.
Well, and I think if we want to show that making design decisions makes us happy, that decluttering makes us happy, if we're always mad about it, if we're always frustrated with our decisions, that's not going to cut it. Like, that's not how we teach them. So if we're in a place where I am fickle about like furniture colors, I change my mind. So I know that the only way to train someone to trust me is to build that trust, to start with little decisions. And then if I'm happy with it, I got to be happy around them. Look, I painted this furniture and it turned out so good. I'm so happy. I'm going to do another one because they do want to protect us from ourselves and they don't want to have to repaint something a million times. So I think that's such a great thing to bring up, which is different than their opinions. But we want to be confident before we ask someone else to get on board with something that we're choosing. So how can you test it before you invest in it? How can you practice something without causing someone else to have to repaint it? Well, paint a little wall, paint something you can reach, or do what you say. Like, that was such a great idea. Like, live with it for 30 days. Look back at it. Do you still swoon when you see the pen? That's a great idea.
Yeah. I like to do the same thing if I want to make a purchase too for any piece of clothing. I usually sit with it because oftentimes it's just a fleeting idea that I've seen and it's more of an emotional reaction to something I've seen versus something that actually is logical and I want to have here in the home. You talked about breaking rules. So like know all the rules so that we know which ones to break. Can you share an instance from your own life when you've actually done that and it worked out well?
Yes. We talk about nailing that scale and having, like, say you are going to put a piece of artwork over a mantle. To the human psyche, when they built the pyramids, we learn in school about the golden triangle, the magic ratio. Sometimes things look in balance and sometimes things just, they don't look in balance. And we're like, I don't know what's wrong with that, but it don't look right. And that's how it is with design. Like, a lot of times we might not know how to fix it, but we know when something looks off. And one of those things is artwork hung over a piece of furniture. And so if we apply the rule of thirds or the magic triangle, whatever, it's going to be that the artwork is about 2/3 the size of what it is hanging over. So in general, that's what is going to look pleasing to the eye. It's going to make your room feel complete. Now, once you do that and you've experienced that, maybe that's a rule you decide to break. Now, of course, you're going to break it because you know the rule, not because you don't want to do the work. So in my last house, we had a brick fireplace that I had painted white. We had this real rustic mantle. And the artwork up there always stumped me. The mantle was a little high and then we had 8-foot ceilings. So we didn't have a lot of room to work with. And one of the things that I liked best up there was just like a 6-inch little European antlers on the dark wood. It just made this quiet whisper, like a little hello. And I loved that. And it was the complete wrong scale. I think it works because sometimes when you break the rules, you have to break them confidently. And so it was like, this is so ridiculously small and I know it. I know what I'm doing. And so it was almost like with a confidence and I really liked that. And I probably wouldn't do that over a dresser or maybe I would. Like, it also is a way to draw attention. If you have a special little piece of art, maybe one of your children watercolored something and you put it in a frame, you know, you hang it lower over a chair. So you do something unexpected so it can get attention on purpose.
So I want to lastly talk about something that we've recently invested in. We've been married for 13 years and we finally bought a nice couch and it has made all of the difference. We both really love it. We also feel a little bit protective over it because we're like, don't let anything happen to this investment piece, but it does make a huge difference. What are your thoughts on investing in a couch and why it makes a huge difference?
Okay. Investing in a sofa. We've gone both ways. We've invested a few times and it has been worth it. And then we even had it slip covered. So that's a nice thing. If you invest in a sofa, which a lot of times is going to be besides like getting countertops for your kitchen, your sofa is probably the biggest piece of furniture, the most expensive thing, the most daunting decision to make. I love investing in that. It saves the landfills. It really makes you not have to re-decide in a few more years. Like it's such a big decision. If you can make it once and not have to make it again for a long time, if you buy a nice enough sofa, you can have it recovered. You can have it slip covered. But I also understand if you have, you know, I had three little boys in 3 years and sometimes it's just nice to know you can have a sofa. And if the cat has kittens on it, it's not going to be the end of the world. In general, if you can invest, I think sofas are, they feel so daunting. And if you've ever bought a sofa you've regretted, which I have twice, it's terrifying. But if you learn how to buy a sofa that you won't hate tomorrow, which I can teach that, I tell people to buy a sofa with a name, buy a sofa with a history, because that means it's going to last through the ages of when you have this silhouette that has been around for a while. I really like investing in that. When you think about like cost per use, I don't know about you, but we sit on our sofa every night. We live on it. You get a lot for your money when you think about how often you use your sofa and your bed and things like that. So if I have a budget, I will spend the bulk of my budget in the family room on the sofa more than anything else. I will find case goods secondhand, and you can even find great secondhand pieces that are super well made. You can find sofas secondhand if you're willing to spend the time, if you're willing to be patient, secondhand. But I am a proponent for if you can afford to buy an investment sofa, I think that is a wonderful way to go. But I don't want anyone to feel guilty if for whatever reason they can't.
Yes, absolutely. In Rule 40 specifically, you talk about hate the sofa, hate the space. So I want you just to share a little bit more about why you believe that to be true.
The rule, hate the sofa, hate the space. That was the hardest one for me to write. I was really nervous about including that in the book because I never want to have anyone feel hopeless or like they have to change everything to have a home they love. But compare it to an outfit. If you're getting dressed and when we put together our outfits, like you usually start with like a pair of pants, like maybe jeans. If you are starting with the biggest part of your outfit being something that you hate, we would never wear a pair of jeans that were uncomfortable and we hated them and we gave them dirty looks and they were handed down. And we know not to expect to feel good in an outfit if we hate the jeans. But for some reason in our home, I think we think, the sofa that my husband had when he was a bachelor, it's 25 years old and the dog did have puppies on it. It's all torn up and I hate it, but help me like my room. The expectation that we can love and want to host the baby shower, host the church small group, whatever, in our room, where the largest piece in there we give dirty looks to on the daily. I think we have to know that that might not work. Does that mean you have to spend $4,500 on a new sofa? Absolutely not. But I do think that means that you might need to find a way to cover the sofa, to get a different sofa, to barter, to look on Facebook Marketplace, because if you hate the sofa, it's going to be really hard for you to love your space.
So this investment sofa that we bought, we did buy it secondhand. We bought it from my friend who's an interior designer. It's a leather couch. I think she did pay like $4,000 for it. So we didn't have to necessarily pay that for it. But it's still like, okay, this is our next season of life. And maybe next time we buy a couch, we'll go all out for ourselves. So I do want to tell listeners that even being married this long and having moved 3 times, this is still our reality. So
I think that's the perfect scenario. Like that's the dream. You did it perfectly. I love that.
Yeah, I think with 3 kids and 2 dogs, we're like, we want a leather couch, but if something massively horrible happens to it, at least we didn't invest that much money in. Well, where can listeners grab a copy of this book? This has been so helpful to me, and the book is even more helpful. Again, you break down 100 house rules that we can follow and really implement immediately, which is helpful as well. So where can listeners find a copy of your book?
It should be anywhere books are sold starting April 23rd in your local library. If you go to thenester.com, you can have all the links that you need for it. We also have a pre-order bonus that I brought a camera crew into my 1905 Queen Anne Victorian house, and we walked through the whole house like a tour. But I talked about the rules that help me make decisions in every room. So it was really fun to do. And I think it's fun to see. The book is fantastic because you can see a rule, you can see the photo that talks about it, but then the video is really helpful just to see more of the space.
That's great. Oh, I want to watch that. And then where can listeners connect with you online?
Thenester.com. I also have a podcast where I teach weekly called House Rules. I love Instagram. So at The Nester on Instagram, I'm everywhere and I'm talking about home everywhere. And I would love to encourage you in your home.
Perfect. Well, as we wrap things up here, I usually ask my guests two questions, but I would rather do this fun rapid fire question round with you just to get to know you a little bit better. So my first question for you is, what is your favorite design style?
I don't have one. I do not have a favorite design style. I hope that's not a disappointment. There are pieces of every style that I love.
I think they call that maximalism, right?
Uh-oh. I cannot stand to be surrounded by a bunch of stuff. So that's where the tension lies, which I love that. Like, I think that is really a fun way to go about being creative, is that I love little pieces of all different types of things, but I also don't want a bunch of stuff. What that ends up me doing, getting large things, getting pieces that have a extreme style. So then my ribbon art behind me, like, that's all I need on the wall, but it makes a big statement.
Okay, I was going to ask you your favorite investment piece. We've talked about the couch. What might be another that has been one of your favorites that you would encourage people to buy as an investment?
Our counters in our kitchen. We did marble and soapstone, which I've only done a couple of kitchens in my life. One was an IKEA kitchen, and I really wanted marble, but I was afraid of it because I thought, well, I am really hard on stuff. I don't always clean up after myself. But someone in my community encouraged me that, well, you're an imperfectionist and you love natural things. I love nature, and marble just makes sense. So we've had it for a year and a half. And I just think, how have I lived my life without natural stone? I love the imperfections. I love that you can see that my kids made dinner over here and all of that. And so I would encourage anyone, if you're thinking about marble and if you are subscribed to being an imperfectionist and seeing the beauty in the life and the wear, that is the stone for you.
What's your favorite place to shop on a budget?
Antique malls. I love antique malls so much. They're my favorite.
What about your favorite place to splurge?
Oh, it depends. There's a store called Jason Home, J-A-Y-S-O-N. They're, I think, in Chicago. And so sometimes I just look for them for ideas. I've only bought a couple of pieces from them, but they do such a good job kind of incorporating different styles. They even sell secondhand pieces. So it's very inspiring to see their catalogs and look at their Instagram.
What's been one of the biggest mistakes that you've made that you're regretting?
I make mistakes all the time. I think the difference between me and other people is I don't dwell on it. I'm like, oh, so I don't like pink paint in my office. That's okay. I'll just paint it again. I am always, I guess, maybe making a mistake of not moving forward is the biggest regret. I have had dining rooms where I painted six different colors. Like, the difference between me and other people, I think, is just the mistakes don't slow me down. I'm just like, oh, that's great information to know. Let's just move forward. Now, I would prefer to make mistakes on lower price things and then build my confidence from that, which is one of the reasons with that marble countertop. One of the ways I knew I would like it, even after someone encouraging me, was I had purchased a piece of secondhand furniture from the previous owners, and it had a marble top on it, and it was, you could lift it up. It wasn't secure. And on the bottom, it had a date. It was like 1918. And I was like, oh my gosh, this has been around 100 years and I love it. I love that, like, you can see all the marks, and that sold me. So there.
And then my last question is, outside of your books, what's another great resource to gather information regarding interior design and homes that has been beneficial to you?
I love all visual resources, but one of my favorite books is called The Perfectly Imperfect Home. It's by Deborah Needleman. It does not have photos. It has watercolors. And I think that's part of the charm of the book, because you don't get distracted with, like, well, I don't like her style. No, no, no. She goes room by room about like what belongs in a room, two nightstands, and just different reasons for different things. I love anything that talks about the logic behind decorating instead of just this lamp looks good here because I think so. I think that's wonderful to be confident and know that. But as a student, as a person who always wants to learn, I love learning from people who can teach the why. And I think she does a really great job of teaching the why. It's probably a 15-year-old book, but you can get it on Amazon. It's amazing.
Awesome. Well, this is great getting to know you here a little bit more personally at the end. And again, your book is House Rules. It's available on what day?
April 23rd.
Awesome. April 23rd. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your wisdom with us today.
Thanks, Diane. I appreciate it.
What did you think of the episode? I hope you enjoyed the conversation. To learn more about today's guest, including links, resources related to everything discussed today, visit the episode page at minimalistmomspodcast.com, where you can find the entire podcast archive, as well as my book, Minimalist Moms, Living and Parenting with Simplicity, or other ways to connect or work with me online. If you'd like to support the podcast, the easiest and most impactful thing you can do is subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave a rating or review of your favorite episode. Lastly, sharing the show or your favorite episode with friends on social media is very helpful and will encourage others on their journey to think more and do with less.